You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Macro, everybody, the podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we, as you know, discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and how that can just inform your opinion about everything that's happening in the world. Today, as per usual, we have with us Srijit Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team. And our topic of conversation today is quite an interesting one, a little bit of a plot twist here, Srijit, that you're bringing us today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the U.S. economy is left, right and center of many economic discussions today. So I thought it's very topical for us to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And glad we have you, as always, to dissect what we have at hand. So yeah, we're talking about the U.S. economy today because recent economic data suggests that their response has been a lot stronger and the market has dialed back some of its rate cut expectations. And these rate cut expectations are something we've highlighted in our previous podcast. So quite a turn of events here. Today, we're going to be talking about the data surprises and its main drivers, the details behind the inflation and labor market situation, some of the pockets of weakness, and finally, the rationale behind the Fed's stance on monetary policy. So Srijit, why don't we start with the data surprises? I think that is, as you said, a big topic of conversation. There were expectations of a slowdown, recession, or a hard landing, but none of those have really materialized. And most of the data continues to be fairly robust. So can you tell us a little bit about why this response has happened and why U.S. economic data continues to beat expectations?
Sure. Quite a bit of data. If you look at, GDP, PMIs, durable goods orders, and particularly non-farm payroll additions recently have surprised to the upside. GDP, for instance, was very strong in the September quarter at 4.8% quarter-on-quarter annualized, and the U.S. gives it as the QoQ number multiplied by 4. So that is 4.8% then, and private investment was also a major driver there. GDP in the next quarter, the December quarter, moderated, but not to the extent it was expected. So that's 3.4%, and this time it continued to be driven by private consumption, but also better net exports, for instance. Some of the surveyed PMI indicators were also stronger. Durable goods orders, like we just said, if you strip out defense or transportation, is quite strong. And the levels there are still well above the pre-pandemic trend. Inflation and payroll data, particularly at the beginning of the year, is sometimes impacted by seasonal adjustment issues. So on inflation, there was also this change in methodology for some components, like owner's equivalent rent, used cars, and so on. So some of these factors impacted a clear assessment of the very strong numbers we saw in January. But even after January, for instance, payroll additions continue to be strong, with the latest March print at almost 300,000 plus of job additions in March, which is again well above market expectations. The only silver lining there is the growth in average hourly earnings, which sort of moderated from the 0.5% month-on-month growth that we saw in January to 0.2 and 0.3 after that. But if you look at some of the details, labor force participation has been inching up. But overall, if you see, there's no meaningful moderation per se yet in the labor market. Even with inflation, the crucial part is the non-housing core services, which jumped in January and moderated in February, but continues to remain quite robust. So this is a part which is closely linked to the dynamics of the labor market and the wage growth. The other part is, which has become a worry of late, is goods inflation, which even excluding food and energy, and this is what really led the disinflation so far, owing to supply side decongestion. Now, this has turned positive in February, and we'll also have to see the impact here going ahead from geopolitics. Overall, if you see, therefore, whichever data you take, it's not really a strong moderation one would have expected in terms of data.
Okay, all right. So not the expected moderation in data there yet. Who knows? We might be having a conversation about that a few podcasts down the road. But one important sector that's probably been a big question mark in most of our conversations is the sector of housing. Yeah. I think it's said that the housing market has been quite buoyant too. Is that a fact? And also, is that in line with what was expected or out of expectation?
You're right. The housing market probably didn't witness the drop one would have expected based on the rise in mortgage rates to above 7%. Second, growth in home prices also kind of bottomed out last year. This is because there is also an impact from the level of inventory. So, the supply side, basically, and even change in preferences after the pandemic and so on. So this is why growth in housing starts there continue to be buoyant. Now, there is also the case of existing home sales being weak, as existing owners don't want to part with much lower mortgage rates that they had locked into earlier. So new home sales have been stronger because of this. And therefore, despite being an interest rate sensitive sector, housing held up pretty well. The other noteworthy aspect, I mean, I'm just mentioning it in this context, is consumer sentiment. You know, some of the indicators like the one by the University of Michigan, which is widely tracked, have broadly bottomed out. And this is, you know, so even for consumers' outlook or expectation on the economy and even on their personal financial situation. So these two factors have been doing pretty well.
Interesting response, honestly, economically. Now, also to draw attention to two points that you brought up in the first response, Srijit, which is inflation and the labor market front, right? I think it's important that we look at that because, you know, like I said, we did discuss the Fed's monetary policy and their approach to it a couple of months ago, late last year. But I think inflation and labor market front should probably help us understand the two variables that the Fed is looking at as well.
Sure. On inflation, goods disinflation has been a major driver so far, and this was also led by supply side unclogging after the pandemic time issues. More recently, like we just mentioned, momentum there has turned positive. Services, including housing, you know, was higher and sticky. This is also the part which is more in line with the health of the labor market, and so, like we just mentioned, the Fed looks at this very closely. The price growth here is moderating, but there is further room to ease. If you look at how broad-based the recent price momentum is, for example, the share of items with positive price momentum picked up quite a bit in January and February. So we have to see how the goods part shapes up from here, also given geopolitical events, and also how moderation in services prices progress. Now, a couple of positives here include market trends, which are now increasing at a lower rate or are flat, and this should show up in data, although, you know, when and by how much is a question. The other argument is that the impact of Fed's policy restriction will likely show more sharply in inflation data once, you know, the supply side decongestion is almost done. The bigger aspect here is, of course, the productivity, which likely has picked up, and that is why the US had high growth, but, you know, broadly disinflation in the last 1 year. But where this, you know, productivity eventually settles in the medium term remains a question. So that's on inflation. On the second part that you asked, which is the labor market. So see, strong payroll addition is the main story there for now. Now, if you look at the private sector, education and health services is one area which has seen strong job gains, accounting for almost 30% of total additions each month. Leisure and hospitality, construction, and to some extent even trade, transportation and utilities are other sectors which have seen, you know, buoyant job additions. Hourly wage growth was particularly strong in January, early in the year, but then weekly earnings growth was weak because, you know, early in the year, holiday season, all of that, therefore number of hours worked were lower. So there was some of this year-end and early year data, you know, specific aspects in the payroll data as well, but not just in inflation. In Feb and March, this number moderated. So the other important data is unemployment insurance claims, you know, which gets reported weekly. They have also mostly moved sideways for both initial and continued claims in the last 5 to 6 months. We also look at data like the job openings, you know, which have also eased a bit, but quite gradually. And if you look at the ratio, for instance, the job openings to hires ratio there, it's around like 1.5 right now, which was 1.8 maybe 2 years ago and 1.6, I think, a year ago. It's still, you know, some distance away from the pre-pandemic ratio of around 1.1 to 1.2. So, you know, in short, payroll addition is buoyant and other indicators are moderated, but, you know, only gradually. And we haven't really seen a strong and broad-based weakness there.
Right, Srijit, but, you know, are there any other variables which are kind of not showing the strength that GDP or payroll data is showing? Because I'm sure it's important to track those variables as well, and also which parts of the economy they're coming from, right?
Yeah. So one variable which has been weak more recently is retail sales. If you look at the data, the average of the sequential growth in retail sales in the last 3 months has been almost flat. In fact, on a real basis, that is, after adjusting for inflation, this has been even weaker. Now, the milder readings have also been quite broad-based within the subcategories of spending, if you look, you know, at the details. We recently also saw some weakness in the employment component of ISM services. And another important aspect which is highlighted in the recent quarterly report on household debt and credit by the New York Fed is a rise in credit card and auto loan delinquencies. Now, the share of these loans transitioning into 30-day and 90-day delinquencies are rising compared to the other categories of consumer loans. The other thing is also, we also know from the Fed's beige book that although economic activity has been strong, consumers are becoming more price sensitive and thus businesses are finding it harder to pass on higher costs. So, you know, the report also noted consumers continue to trade down and shift away from discretionary goods. So these are some of the weaker aspects that, you know, we've been observing. the other thing is also that we have to, you know, acknowledge that some of the strong data, whatever we've been seeing, is in aggregate. And it need not be the same across households or across subcategories, right? Say, you know, among households of different income levels. So there could potentially be weakness, for instance, in the lower income segments, particularly as the excess savings they have accumulated during the pandemic could have been drawn down relatively faster or much more than those in the higher income segments, right? That is more you know, or what we're looking at on the consumer side. Separately, another area, I think we've talked about this before, and that we continue to watch, is the commercial real estate space, mainly for offices, that is, where occupancy rates continue to be low after the pandemic. And the small banks particularly have a, you know, bigger share of loan exposure here. So I think these are the aspects that we are broadly looking at where there is some weakness.
Interesting, and also a little bit counterintuitive, you know, but I'm kind of used to that now on these podcasts, Richard, that when it comes to, you know, finding areas that are surprising, like you've just detailed, some relatively weaker pockets, especially on consumption, which is what is surprising, because, you know, this is a story which has been otherwise dominated by stronger than expected economic data. But one thing I'd really like to introduce into the podcast, into the conversation at this point, is also the main reason for this broad economic outperformance in the US. I don't think it was very much expected. So what do you think has been the main driver for this complete turn moment?
So the single most important driver has been the US federal government fiscal. Now, there was, I think we've had an entire episode dedicated to this on the US fiscal. But just to repeat some of that, so there was a sharp jump in the fiscal deficit in 2020 and 2021 with the heavy response to the pandemic. And the response there was mostly in the form of direct cash transfers and unemployment insurance. This resulted in huge household excess savings on aggregate, which we, you know, again, just discussed. But on fiscal, if you see, even after some consolidation in the deficit in 2022, it widened again last year in 2023. Right. Even if you look at the latest official projections by the CBO, that is the Congressional Budget Office, it is expected to stay above 6% even 10 years from now. So that's quite high, and there is no real planned consolidation in sight. And, and the most important thing is this is happening at a time when the U.S. economy is now growing above its long-term potential rate. So this has been one of the major reasons for the economy being strong. Additionally, if you see the Fed's balance sheet, which more than doubled from the $4.2 trillion size before the pandemic to just under $9 trillion in 2022, it is now down from its peak, but only about 16%.
Okay.
On the other hand, if you look at the ECB's balance sheet, it's down around 25 to 26%.
Okay.
So soon the Fed will also be tapering its quantitative tightening. These two aspects of, you know, the fiscal and monetary policy has been the main drivers, particularly fiscal policy. So it continues to be pro-cyclical, like I said, in a strong growth environment. I think that's the main factor.
Okay, nice. So you've brought up the Fed, so we might as well talk about it. It's the final question of the podcast now. You've already spoken about the reduction in the size of its balance sheet. Could you take us through what the Fed and the market are looking at, or, you know, you perceive them looking at in terms of all of the data and policy rate action? Has their approach changed considerably since our last conversation?
So if you remember, the Fed pivoted in December when it said disinflation has progressed well, policy rate is likely peaked in the cycle, and that it has started discussion on the timing of policy rate cuts in 2024. And it also projected 75 basis points of rate cuts this year, so likely three cuts of 25 basis points each. Thereafter, what happened is the market got ahead of the Fed and factored in almost 150 basis points of rate cuts. That is double the policy rate cuts projected by the Fed. But like we discussed in detail, you know, data turned out to be stronger than expected. This is quite broad-based, and some of that continues. So this led the market to eventually reprice its rate expectation down towards that of the Fed. In the latest meeting in March, the FOMC stuck to its projection of 75 basis points of rate cuts in 2024. So again, likely three cuts of 25 basis points each. Although the Fed's projections for core PCE and real GDP were revised upward. Now, it acknowledged the recent upside surprises in data, but said that, you know, that hasn't really changed the inflation story of, you know, inflation moving down towards 2%, given it understands the road can sometimes be a little bumpy. Now, in this context, let us also not forget the Fed has hiked policy rates well above, you know, any estimates of neutral rate. So the Fed is likely, therefore, saying that a strong slowdown in growth is now really not a strict prerequisite to start easing. But that said, market-based probability of a rate cut in June has moderated as data continues to surprise. But, you know, therefore, data continues to be important, and how inflation and labor market play out in the next few months will really be crucial to gauge the Fed's likely reaction. In the medium term, though, the constraint on policy easing could be one, the estimate of long-term neutral rate, which many believe have moved up after the pandemic. The second constraint, again, could be fiscal policy, which we just discussed, you know, because it's officially projected to be loose even 10 years from now. But that's more on the medium term. That's where I would leave it.
I think we've gone through a pretty thorough deep dive into the current situation with the US economy. Some surprises there and some places that, you know, hopefully they'll be able to turn around with the right approach. Just to summarize our conversation today, Srijit, there are some weak pockets, but economic data surprises continue and the US economy is currently growing above its long-term potential. We've also taken a look at a host of recent data, but the main reason for the strong growth is really just the fiscal policy. And the federal government fiscal deficit is now higher than pre-pandemic and is projected to stay so for quite a while. But in the meantime, again, like you suggested, the Fed has stuck to its projection from December of 3 rate cuts in 2024, and markets have reduced their own expectations towards this, which is why economic data, particularly on inflation and the labor market in the next few months, will be important to understand how the Fed's policy reaction could be. I hope I've pretty much nailed all the points that we talked about today.
Spot on. Perfect.
Well, thank you to you, Srijit, as always, for helping us go through this deep dive. Wouldn't be possible without you. And to all our listeners, we hope you found this discussion useful. I think this is what we kind of live for on the podcast, right, Srijit? A couple of these surprising moments that come our way every couple months and we can dissect them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, we'll be back with another podcast on Let's Talk Macro very soon, everybody. But for now, this is Mia Halia and Srijit signing off. Thank you for tuning in.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.